Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Monday morning, and while I have the time, I want to do the Haftarah, which is being sponsored by a good friend, the Rechtans. Stel Rechtan tells me that, I guess, another, say, was it today 24 Adar, I believe? Or something like that. So 27 Adar this week is the yard site of her father-in-law, Manny's father, Aryeh ben Yoel. I have it here from the past. Right. He was from, yeah, right, I remember this. Yeah, he's from Kushnitz in Poland. He went through the war, the full business. Like I always say, the Polish had it worse because they were there for all the, from the beginning of the Holocaust to the end, you know. And he lost his family and then got married after the war when he came here, like my father, you know, and built whatever family he could. And I didn't know that. His son was named after two children from the first family who perished. Oh, yeah, yeah. So we're paying tribute to his memory. Now he has, thank God, he has family and children, grandchildren, probably great-grandchildren. So that's the best you can say for somebody who went through the war. Living in Kushnitz was the wrong place at the wrong time. That's all I can say. Wrong place at the wrong time. But nobody gets to pick where they live. Not where they're born, anyway. So, as I said, the Neshama should have an Aliyah. And we thank them for the sponsorship. The Haftorah today, this is my Bar Mitzvah Parsha. So the Haftorah is usually considered pretty boring by most people because it talks about Shlomo Melch and what they built the Beis HaMikdash, and you get into the, you know, unless you see a picture, you don't know what's going on with the pillars and the capitals and the this and that and the other. And the strange part to me has to do with the fact the there are two versions of the Haftorah. Either you start like the Sephardim Ashkenazim, look at the art scroll in the back, you know, on page 1162. You'll see the Sephardim and the Chabad start with Perek Zayin, Pasuk Yud Gimel, and the Ashkenaz regular skip all that and go to Pasuk Mem. So the whole Haftorah is only 10 Pesukim, according to us. According to others, it'd be longer. The only reason I'm mentioning this is, as often happens, the Haftorah, particularly in the way that we read it, is truncated. It's actually more sound from a contextual point of view to start like the Sephardim and the Chabad with Perek Zayin, at least Pasuk Yud Gimel. And the reason I say this is because we have this strange character named Chirim, Hiram. Now, the reason I mention is there are two Chirim, there are two Hirams in the story of Shlomo and building a Beis HaMikdash, A and B. Hiram A was the king of Tyre. Tyre, Tzor, as we call him, was a city in Lebanon, which emerged like the Singapore at that time and became a very powerful and rich country through commerce and had colonies. I mean, Carthage is a colony of Tyre and became a big deal financially, you know, economically. And they built a powerful city. Believe me, people don't know. Nebuchadnezzar besieged Tyre for 13 years and was not successful in taking it. That's probably one of the reasons why the Jews figured they could hold out Jerusalem against them. It was a big and powerful city. Well, the country was a city, but had an empire, as cities sometimes do, like Venice, for example, or something like that. That's a whole theme in history of these very interesting Venice-type situations in which a city becomes very powerful, mainly through the money and hiring mercenaries and that sort of thing. So, there are people recently, I mean, in the last 50 years, something like that, there's been a lot of scholarship on Tyre, archaeologically. I'm not a big archaeologist. But anyway, we're told that there was a king named Hiram, Melchzor, Hiram of Tyre, and King David hooked up with him, that they built the King David's wooden palace. It's in Shmuel. And then Shlomo hooked up with him, to get the wood and stuff like that for Beis HaMikdash. Because they got the Arzei Alavanim, which means the cedar trees in Lebanon, which means it's outside of Israel. Now, by the way, Tzor, Tzidon, the ganze business, halachically, should be part of Eretz Yisrael. If you look at the borders, you'll see that Joshua should have conquered that, but he didn't. All right? It's a lot of areas in the time of Yeshua, they should have, but didn't. And Lebanon would be part of that, which is interesting. But on the other hand, we don't have records of wars between the Lebanon and Israel, even though we might get one now, as I speak, in March of 2024. I hope not, but you never know. But in old days, it wasn't like that. Because, you know, remember the old slogan, make love, not war? It's here, make money, not war. That's tired. Make money, not war. And there was a guy called Kir. I mean, historically, there was a guy, Hiram, the king of Tyre. And, you know, there's no record of him interacting with David and Shlomo. Unless you want to go that the rabbit hole of Josephus, you know, Josephus has a book against Appiad, in which he purports to quote from old Greek books. You never know. Did he make it up? Not make it up, Josephus. Sometimes they're quite accurate. Sometimes they're not. There was a guy, Menander, who talked about the history of the kings of Tyre, but you don't need to know that. Anyway, but there was a guy, Hiram of Tyre, and Shlomo, as I say, dealt with him. And, you know, Shlomo cheated him in real estate. Nothing new in that. If you look about the cities he sold him, and things like that. Shine. Then, so in other words, this guy supplied materials for building Beis HaMikdash. It's a little bit weird, because why should Shlomo have wanted Geisha lumber for the Beis HaMikdash? That has to do with what I've been talking about all the time in the podcast. The way Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash is taka weird. He had slave labor force. He used the Shiva Amamin. He did all kinds of, you know, he had a corvée system. It's strange. You understand? And part of the strangeness is this idea of using what you know and I know. The Chazal go to great lengths to say that when they talk about the Mishkan, which of course was built in the time of Moshe, so we've all heard this from Rashi, the wood was taken by Yaakov Avinu, the Atzei Shittim, remember? Why do they say that? Well, the simple answer is, where do you get wood in the desert? You have to have some way to explain that, right? They had a lot of wood that they used in the Beis HaMikdash. If you're middle of Sinai Desert, ain't no forest. Where'd they get it? So it's despite this from Yaakov Avinu. Okay, fine. But above and beyond that, the idea seems to be, they wanted Kedusha Tahara. If you're using wood for the Mishkan, it should be the Atzei Shittim from Yaakov Avinu. Imagine, if it's true, right? It's a medrash, but if it's true, imagine when they took that wood and used it for the beams and whatever they did in the Mishkan, you know, to hold the walls up and all that stuff, or to build the boxes. What are you building the box, the Aron, from? Right? This is wood from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu knew, I'm sure he had machshavas and kavanas, right? Like Hasidic style, you know? And, you know, therefore, the wood was not stam wood. It was saturated with kedusha. Isn't that the way we usually approach these sorts of things? By contrast, Shlomo goes to a guy and he says, I heard you got the best quality stuff, so I'm buying it from you, like rich Jews do. And, you know, that's the deal they cut. And he says, Shlomo says, nobody knows how to do wood like you guys, the Lebanese and so forth. I mean, okay. But it is strange. Now, I'm not finished. Everything I just dealt with was a guy called Hiram, the king of Tyre, whose descendants and stuff like that continue for many centuries to be the kings of Tyre, with bad consequences for the Jews, as I shall attempt to explain in a minute. There's another guy, which if you have the regular Vayakhel, the longer version of the Sfardim and the Chabad, it starts the story, as opposed to the truncated version that you and I, most of us, are going to read on Shabbos. And there it starts, Vayishlach HaMelech Shlomo, Vayikach es Chira Mitzor, that Shlomo sent and took a guy, Hiram, from Tyre. So you immediately say like this, Shlomo brought the king of Tyre. Wrong. Ben Ish al-Monahi mimata Naphtali, that this Hiram of Tsar that we're talking about is a different guy. He just had the same name. Meaning, his name was Hiram, and he happened to live in the city of Tsar. He's not the king, though. The king is another guy, that same name. Right? There's a guy called Charles III, King of England. There are also people in London called Charles. So I could say, you know, I could go to a clothing store, it could be called Charles of London. Doesn't mean it's the king. So Ben Ish al-Monahi mimata Naphtali, here it says, his mother was Jewish and the father was a guy. Ba'aviv Ish Tzori, the father was from Tzor, Chorish Nechoshes, and he was a coppersmith. So in other words, Shlomo said like this, I need for part of the Beis HaMikdash, namely the metal stuff, which was all Nechoshes. Okay? So I need a Michelangelo, right? A Leonardo da Vinci to do the fancy schmancy artwork that I want for the Beis HaMikdash in terms of the metal stuff. And apparently there was nobody in Israel, which is interesting, that was top of the line. And apparently the top of the line guy was a child of a mixed marriage. The language is funny because usually we don't recognize, you know, marriages between Jews and non-Jews. But they just tell you very frankly, Ben Ish al-Monahu mimata Naphtali, V'aviv Ish Tzori, Chorish Nechoshes. His father was from Tyre. I'm not sure if Chorish Nechoshes means that this guy was a Chorish Nechoshes or he had it hereditarily by his father. Whatever the case is, this guy turns out to be the Michelangelo. V'ayimol, and the language is interesting. Listen closely. V'ayimole es ha-chochma ves ha-tvuna ves ha-das lasas v'chom locha b'nechoshes. Translate. V'ayimole, and he was filled. It's nifal. One second. Yeah, sorry about that. Anyway, it says v'ayimole is nifal, which means it's passive. And since it's vav m'hapach, so he was filled with chabad, with chacham tuvin v'das. Those are the three qualities that we're told were necessary for the Mishkan also. Remember with Betzal and Uri, v'ayimole oso, Rachel him b'chacham tuvin v'das. Okay? And Chacham Tuvin HaDas is mentioned elsewhere as well. But it's particularly mentioned in terms of the artisan requirements for the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. But notice the difference, okay? I mean, let's put it this way. If this guy grew up in Tzor, and he had to be summoned by King Solomon from Tzor, his upbringing is a guy. I mean, I get it halachically, technically, his mother was from Naphtali. I mean, I get that, but she married this guy, and who was from Tzor. She married a Lebanese guy, and they lived there. So let's put it this way. He didn't grow up in no Mei Sharm or B'nai Brak. He grew up in Tzor as a Chorish Nechoshes, where probably he worked, I mean, as Mistaber, he worked all the time in art, fancy art stuff for the, you know, for the Phoenicians. You know, that's who Tzor was, the Phoenicians. And five will get you 10 that he worked on idols and things. I mean, that's what their culture was. If you know archaeology, you'll know that the ancient Tyre was like a major headquarters of a big civilization of a pagan nature, which was natural to the Middle East at that time. The Jews were trying to do something different. And Tyre, you know, the opposite. Not only that, but Tzor and Sidon, we know later on, that's the headquarters of Baal and Asherah. Baal and Asherah are two gods. Baal is the male god, Asherah is the female god. I'm not talking about the halachic definition of Asherah as a tree. I'm talking about historically. Baal is the name of a male god, that's why he's called Baal. And the female is called Asherah. It's a male fertility god and a female fertility god. You can just Google if you want, and you can see, you know, all kinds of little statues. They find them all the time. They find them all the time on archaeological things, unfortunately. In fact, they find plenty of them in Israel, I'm sorry to say. They're very widespread. The little gods, you know, he's a fatso, she's a fatso. It's not pretty by our standards today, but obviously it was pretty by the standards of 3,000 years ago. So it's just funny. He's bringing in a guy who's halachically Jewish, but we would call him half Jewish today, meaning in the sense that his one parent is this and the other parent is that. And if he's living in Sword, it doesn't sound like the father was a Magyar or something like that. And, you know, I mean, that's okay. Maybe Zagert said it. It don't sound like that. And Naphtali, historically, was, you know, right up in the Galilee, right next to Lebanon. So a Jewish girl met a non-Jewish guy. It happens. It happened then also. And he just turned out to be a genius, apparently, in Michelangelo work. In other words, in terms of Nechoshes, he could do amazing things in Nechoshes. And Shlomo had a big plan for Nechoshes. And he hired him, right? And the Pasuk again. Now, contrast that with the Mishkan. Who's the main guy, artisan in the Mishkan? Bezalel and Oliyav. How is Bezalel described? The Rabbanu Shalom filled him with this wisdom. Notice he had what you would say an inspiration of artisanship from above. Okay? Hashem called him. Meaning, when Moshe is building the Mishkan, the two guys in charge were designated by the Rabbanu Shalom. Get it? Moshe didn't go around and say, like this, who's the most talented artisan over here? But Saul and Aliyah were called by God. So that means that was their destiny. That's a very frum type thing. Because the guy in charge was appointed by the Rabbanu Shalom. Hashem didn't say to Moshe Rabbeinu, listen, go get a manual and learn it up, and you do it. I told you last week, it's strange how Aaron made a golden calf. I mean, how'd he do it? I mean, physically, that you need to know the smelting business, the sculpture business, whatever they call it. How do you put in a lot of gold and come out and fashion a calf? I mean, again, I'm asking you. I give it out to you. Those with the training can do it. Those without the training can't do it. You know, I mean, people made idols, but you got to know what you're doing. Can't just take a blob of gold and, you know, and turn it into a statue. So, you know, how do you fashion it? So, I don't know the answer, because I don't know either. That's goof of why Aaron, that's the other, you know, version where Aaron says, I didn't do it. I threw it in and out popped the ego. But the push-up shot is by Yaseu Ego Masecha. So Aaron did. So, in the end, it's Bital Valiyov, because they had this skill. I imagine, Bezalel and Aliyav had worked in Egypt as slaves in the capacity of building, and they picked it up from the Egyptians, you know what I mean, as part of their job. What did you do, Bezalel? I used to work on construction projects, doing what? Building buildings, doing things in metal and gold and silver and things like that. Okay, so that's how you picked up your knowledge. That's fine. Especially if Hashem calls you. In other words, if Hashem says, this is the guy I want, especially when you remember that Bezalel was the grandson of Chur, who had been killed for Egozov, etc., etc. The Medrash Rabba goes on that. Here's Shlomo with somebody totally different. Doesn't come across as a particularly frum guy. Shlomo's like a rich guy who says, I guess I want top of the line. So I don't care whether this guy's a Shlomo Shabbos or not. I want top of the line. And he gets top of the line in terms of artistic. And what does he do over there? It says, he did all the Nechoshes stuff. Right? And he goes on to tell you that he made these two big pillars, Yochanan and Boaz. Right? No, the Shlomo, as far as I remember, has a number of items in Beis HaMikdash, which you didn't have in the Mishkan. One was this giant kinor, what they call the Yom Shel Shlomo. What, I think I talked about it last year. One is these two pillars, giant pillars, the top of which has all kind of fancy metal work on it, super fancy stuff, mesh work and things like that, pomegranates, all right? And they were, let's put it this way, when you walked into the Beis HaMikdash, one of the things you saw were two big pillars. I don't think they're going anywhere, as I recall. Hold on for a second. Yeah, I just went online just for the heck of it and looked for images of Solomon's temple. Most of them from Christians, things like that, but they're following more or less, you know, what the text says. They're not exactly right, obviously, and some was imaginative. You'll see the Yamshel Shlomo with the cows under it and all the rest of it, and you'll see the two big pillars next door to the Kodesh building. What are they for? There's some symbolism, obviously. I'm just saying, you know, that's a shtick, and that's what this guy did. Hiram, the Michelangelo, and they were very fancy. Later on, I remember when Nebuchadnezzar destroys the base of Migdash, meaning Nebuchadnezzar at his command, they spent a lot of time knocking down those pillars and taking a veldt of Nechoshes. And the idea was to make it super fancy. Now, that's what the first half of the Haftorah that you and I don't read is talking about. It says in Vayakas Amodim Lechechel. We call Vayikra Shmo Yochim, Vayikra Masim and Smol, Vayikra Boaz. He called one, but okay. And on top of them was all kind of fancy schmancy stuff, rose like designs. But then come to our thing, our Haftorah, and then you get into the fact that that he made a Vayaz Chiro Mesa Kiyos Vesuim Mesa Mizrikos, and he made all the, what should I say, the Kiyos, you know, the dishes. The basins and the shovels and for the dom, you know, and things like that. No, then he got them into the little things and all kind of, listen to this, Rimonim Arba Meos Shtei Shoshabas, Sosabas. He made 400 pomegranates for the two netted ornamentations. I mean, wow, okay? 400 little pomegranates made out of the Nechoshes, okay? And he also does, as I say, the Yamshel Shlomo, that big basin with the whole thing around it. And there was so much of it that they didn't even take a measure. That's what the Pasuk says. But Kikar Yan Yitzamach HaMelech, they couldn't, you know, they need like a factory or something like that, because you got to melt the stuff down and then cast it. I don't know how it's done. But he said they designated a place in Kikar Yardin far from Jerusalem where they had a big empty space. And that's where this guy executed all this sort of thing. So it must have been, you know, smoke and smelly and you know, belching the ashes and things like that. That's how this guy set it up. Okay? And fine. So it means that the guy in charge was a high professional, but wasn't particularly from guy. I mean, unless I'm totally wrong, and even though this guy came from mixed marriage, he was a tzaddik yisrael. You know, it doesn't say that. You know, it doesn't come across like that. So Shlomo was working, you know, high end. He wanted fancy schmancy. The archaeologists tell us, I never know if it's 100% true. It could be that. How should I put this? Think of the base of Migdash that you are familiar with. From pictures and Mishnayos and things of that nature, Yuma and so forth. That was Herod's temple, correct? No, there was a Bais Rishon that was destroyed. Then there was a Bais Sheni, what we call from the time of Zerubbabel and Ezra in that kind of period. We don't really know exactly what that looked like. It's not described in detail, except maybe in the letter of Aristeus. And then there's the one that Hordus rebuilt about less than 100 years before the Korban, 80 years before the Korban, something like that, where Hordus, for his own reasons, just, you know, knocked the temple down bit by bit and rebuilt it in fancy schmancy Greek style. And as you know, it was very beautiful. And Chazal say, oh, if you never saw Hordus' building, you never saw a pretty building. So it looked like a Hellenistic temple. Now, it was a Jewish temple, I get it. It wasn't a Buddha's Arab. But the architecture, the white marble, you know, the flat floor system, you know, very Greek, you know what I'm saying? It looks very much like a Greek temple, and the Greeks were very good when it comes to beauty. In other words, if you've ever seen, or you can Google a picture of a Greek temple in its heyday, not in the ruins of today, you know, the Parthenon and all that, We always say it's very beautiful. So that means that there's no Jewish art. The Jews take whatever the art is and, you know, spin it for their purposes. That's true down till today. I said all the time, just look at Becher's or Havdalah things, right? Spice boxes and things like that, summer boxes. You go to a museum or you go on exhibits. The one from Germany looks German. The one from the Arabs looks Arab. You know, the one from Eastern Europe looks like, you know, Eastern European. But that's Italian. It looks Italian. We take whatever the current thing is and you spin it for the Jewish cause. So Herod, who was very heavily influenced by Hellenism, obviously, you know, he wasn't really Jewish even, although he claimed to be, did it the Greek style. What did Ezra, Nehemiah, those guys, we don't know. We don't know. What did the Mishkan look like? I've seen, who was it, Professor Solomon, somebody like that. I've seen people say that it looks Egyptian style. You know what I'm saying? The Mishkan is Egyptian style. Now, it was Jewish, of course, but and the fundamentals that the Aron is here and the Mizbeach HaNechoshes is there, you know, that had to be very halachic. But the, you know, materials and things like this apparently seem to be Egyptian. I forgot the guy's name. You know, he's a from Egyptologist and all that. So what was Shlomo's like? So the archaeologists will tell you it was built in Phoenician style. Now, I repeat, there are halachim of Shemisina and all that where the Mizbech and the Choshes has to be and where the Kodesh HaKadoshim has to be. So it's not a question of taking a Goyish thing in terms of the location of particular parts. But there's a style of building, right? Some people listening to this podcast are in construction business. If you're building something, I mean, there's a certain architect style, you know, this way or that way. And it's not going to be 18th century. If you're constructing a strip mall, not going to be built, you know, like the Renaissance, not usually. So built according to contemporary taste. So Shlomo Melch's building seems to be built, excuse me, on the Phoenician style. That was, together with the Egyptians, the two big styles at that time. Before the Greeks even existed, so to speak, or we're not in the Middle East. So here's Shlomo bringing in the wood from Phoenicia, and he's also from Hiram, the king of Tyre, and he's bringing in the metal stuff from Phoenicia, from this guy, Hiram Tzor, the Jewish Michelangelo, and he builds like a substantial part of the fancy schmancy part of the base of Mikdash, especially the pillars of Yochanan Bozen, a lot more than that. And it says he used up so much stuff, meaning he had a blank check, to use up so much stuff that they didn't even weigh it. I forget what it says in the Haftarah today, somewhere like, Vayanach Shlomo is called Kelim, Meirov Ma'od Ma'od, Lo Nech Kar Mishkal Nechoshes. He had so much stuff there that they couldn't weigh. No, they got tired of counting how much they're using. So basically, he said like this, blank check, use whatever you need, import whatever you need, money's no problem. Send me the bill, right? Pretty good to have a situation like that, right? But Shlomo Melch, but Tokfo, when the Jews were loaded, okay, they could do it. But the thing is, it doesn't smell good. And indeed, we know, as far as I can tell, this is the beginning of the engagement of the Jews with other Goyish societies. And Tzor was a headquarters, not only a place that made money, but had a big culture. And this ultimately proved fatal. And I would say it was like a mistake of Shlomo. You know, we know that he made a mistake because it says he then ended up marrying all these Goyish princesses and things like this. And they turned his heart astray and they built churches in Jerusalem, etc., etc. We know this. Chazal deprecate very strongly Shlomo's policy of pragmatism. I mean, the pragmatism is, get me the best Michelangelo. I don't care who he is. You know, he could be a this, LGBT, anything. You know, I don't care. It's quality that counts. But on the other hand, you have the other object, which is, no, you want the Atzeshitim from Yaakov Avinu. That's a different way of looking at it. I remember I was once in Bells in Jerusalem, and they said the Bells of Rebbe, like supervised every brick, something to that effect, you know, or poured the concrete or something to that. I mean, I get that, you know. Think about it. Every yeshiva, this is funny what I'm saying. Every yeshiva you know is built by Goyim. T.A., Beis Yaakov, Yer Yisrael, YU, Lakewood. I mean, who does the building? They go to Israel, it's the Arabs. It's funny. The buildings are supposed to be, I mean, you'd say like this, oh, if this is going to be a Mokum Torah, and you want it to be saturated with Kedusha Tahara, the builders should all be Jewish. Not only Jewish, the builders should all be Chazanish. You know what I mean? Should be the firmest of the firm and have the right kavanas, the right machshavas, and so on and so forth. We don't have this attitude, you know? Like I said before, it's funny. Everything's built by people not Jewish. And if it's built by Jews, it's not from, certainly. Now, maybe you could say that's why these things don't last. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying, but it goes back to Shlomo Melch. Now, the Chazal deprecate this policy in the following way. They blessed him for marrying Bas Paro. Now, he married 1,000 wives. Plenty more princesses. But Bas Paro seemed to capture his imagination. What the heck did you have to go back to Egypt for? Right? So you tell me, for pragmatic policies. Shlomo got stuff out of that marriage. In fact, the Egyptians wiped out a Canaanite city and gave it to Shlomo as a wedding present, in which Shlomo could, you know, pat himself on the back and say, see, I married the girl, and I spared myself a war. They fought the war for me and wiped out the Canaanite city. It was Gezer. On the other hand, how should I say, the Chumash tells you all the time, don't go back to Egypt. In fact, it warns kings, don't go back to Egypt, right? Laman Harbo Sus. And Shlomo Melch marries the Egyptian princess. What happened to her and to these other brides? We don't really give too much thought of it. We know that they built churches and things like that, which lasted many centuries. But did they have kids? I mean, I imagine they did. I'm not saying the child of Solomon and the princess of Egypt ended up being the next king, because that's not who Rehoboam was. But they had children, and the children lived in Jerusalem, and the mother was Azoi, and this one, the mother, is the princess of Moab, and this one, the mother, is the princess from Ammon, this one, the mother, princess from Tzor. You get my point? You end up with a funny situation. There's all these quote-unquote mixed marriages. Now, I know technically they converted, but you know, and I know, as the Rambam puts it, these conversions were and which is why the Book of Kings calls them Noshim Nochrios. Yeah, they had their official conversion, but that's shooting the bull. Really, really, they weren't. You know, like I say, technically they weren't. Really, they weren't. So Shlomo Melch has 1,000 of these people, or I don't know how many, running around Yerushalayim. What's with this mixed marriage business? And the guy he hires to run and build all the stuff in the base of Mish, Chiram, is also Ben Ish Almon Meshes Naphtali and Oviv is Ish Tzori. It wasn't a good business. And you and I know it turned out bad, because in the end, you know, you put a good and the bad together. There's a good boy influenced the bad boy, the bad boy influenced the good boy. Once in a blue moon, you do find, I've seen it, that the good boy influences the bad boy. It can happen. But Ruba, it's the other way around. And that's what happened in Shlomo's time. And that makes the story, to me anyway, that makes the story of the building of Beis Hamikdash, which is, you know, celebrated in our Haftarah, what's the word, bittersweet. You know, I mean, Shlomo Melch's Beis Hamikdash was magnificent, but it's like a flawed, you know what I mean? Like, the people in charge weren't the people you would expect to be in charge. If the book was written by Art Scroll, then Shlomo would have been, you know, gone to, you know what I mean, the biggest Hasidic Rebbes and the biggest Punavish and all that stuff. And, you know, say, give me the frumest people, they should do the Avodah on the Beis Hamikdash. If the Beis Hamikdash came tomorrow, the Mashiach came tomorrow, and they put out a sign, we're intending to build a Beis Hamikdash, we're looking for workers. I mean, wouldn't every yeshiva guy do that? I mean, to have a piece of the action in physically building the Beis Hamikdash, wouldn't you run to do it? I mean, if you were young and healthy, wouldn't you do it? Right? mean, you think like, wow, that's something you could tell your children forever. That's not how he ran it. At least not the way, that's not the way it comes across, unless we're missing something. So we have a whole description of the Michelangelo stuff, of Hiram of Tsor, not the king, but the Michelangelo guy. But at the end, it leaves you with a funny taste in the mouth. At least me. Anyway, I've gone way too long, but it's an unusual theme that we're dealing with over here, and I wanted to share it. At least that's what I think. And I want to end up by thanking the Rechtan family. Again, the yard sale is coming up in a few days. Of somebody went through the war in the worst possible way, but happily is able to rebuild. I mean, it's never the same. It's never the same. But you do the best you can. And you rebuild. And that's all anybody can ask from somebody. So Baruch Hashem for that.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.